location and the precise position of the gun. By the time that second expires, his hand is empty and mine isn't. At the end of the next second, the gun is trained at the face of Evan Walker. Walker is the linchpin, the fulcrum upon which our survival rests. Alive, he's an unacceptable risk. Pulling the trigger might cost my own life, I know that. Cassie, even Zombie, might kill me for killing him, but I don't have a choice. We're out of time. None of them can hear it yet, but I can. The sound of the chopper bearing down from the north, loaded with Hellfire missiles and a squad of Vosh's best sharpshooters. The loss of Constance's signal can only mean one thing.
Ringer!
Zombie cries hoarsely. What the fuck? A tiny figure rushes from my right. Nugget. I pull the punch so I don't break his sternum, but the blow sends him flying off his feet and into Sullivan's chest. They plop to the floor in a sprawl of arms and legs. I stay focused on the target.
Ben, don't,
Walker says calmly, though Zombie hasn't moved. Let's hear what she wants.
You know what I want.
Finger tightening on the trigger.
There's no question that Walker has to die. It's so obvious, even Nugget would agree if he knew the facts.
His sister, too. Well, maybe not. Love blinds more than it reveals. Razor taught me that.
Ben!
Walker shouts.
No!
Zombie doesn't dive for a weapon. He doesn't leap toward me. He takes two very slow, very deliberate steps to put his body between me and Evan Walker.
Sorry, Ringer, Zombie says.
Incredibly, he's decided to whip out the Slayer smile.
Not going to happen.
He raises his arms as if to offer a better target.
Zombie, you don't know.
Well, that's a given. I don't know shit.
If it were anyone else. Sullivan, even Nugget. What is the cost, Marika? What is the price?
Zombie, there's no time.
No time for what?
He heard it then. They all heard it. It had come within range of normal human hearing. The chopper.
Holy shit, Sullivan gasped. What have you done? What the hell have you done?
I ignore her. Only Zombie matters.
They don't want us, I tell him. They want him. We can't let them have him, Zombie.
If Zombie would just dip his head a half inch, that's all I need, half an inch. The 12th system will do the rest.
I'm sorry, Zombie, there's no time.
The hub locks in. I let loose the round. The bullet smashes into Zombie's thigh. He's supposed to go down to clear the way for the next round, the kill shot to Evan Walker's head. He doesn't. Instead, he falls back into Walker's chest and Walker wraps his arms around him, holding him up or using him as a human shield. Beneath the faint sound of the rotors outside, an even fainter sound, the thwop of a parachute deploying, then another, thwop, 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 five in all. It hits me I've been appealing to the wrong person.
Drop him, I say to Evan Walker. If you care at all about what happens to Cassie, drop him.
But he doesn't, and now I'm out of time. Drawn out any further, this stalemate will cost all our lives.
The fifth wave is coming.
Chapter 40. Evan Walker. There can be only one explanation. Her leap across the room, the speed of her hands, the acuity of her vision and hearing. Only one possibility. She had been enhanced. A human had received the gift. Why? She propelled herself toward the front window, covering the length of the room in three strides, whirling her body in midair to strike the glass with her shoulder, then disappearing into a halo of pulverized glass and wood. Cassie immediately started toward him, or toward Ben, whom he still held upright. Megan, Evan said, get her down to the basement. Cassie nodded. She understood. She grabbed her little brother's wrist and yanked him toward the hallway.
No, I'm staying with Zombie.
Jesus Christ, Sam, come on. They fled down the hall. The chopper was getting closer, The sound of its engines flowed through the broken window like waves crashing on the beach. First things first, though. He heaved Ben over his shoulder and carried him toward the sofa, stepping over the body that lay amid the shattered remnants of the coffee table. He laid Ben on the sofa and glanced about for something to tie off the leg. The dead woman's hoodie. Evan knelt beside her and ripped the hoodie open. He tore off a strip from collar to hem and swung back around. Ben was eyeing him from a colorless face, breath high in his chest, going into shock. The bullet had entered Ben's leg just above the kneecap. Any lower, and he'd never walk again. Ben wasn't lucky. Ringer had placed the shot carefully. Ben opened his mouth and said, "My bad. I shouldn't have brought them here." "You couldn't know," Evan assured him. Ben shook his head violently.
"No excuse."
He slammed his open palm against the cushions and dust exploded into the air. He coughed. Evan lifted his eyes toward the ceiling and listened. How much time did they have? Hard to tell. 2 minutes? Less? He looked back down at Ben, who said,
"Basement."
Evan nodded. "Basement." He pulled Ben from the sofa and slung him over his shoulder. Where was Cassie? He trotted down the stairs, Ben's cheek bouncing against his back. He carried him to the far corner of the room and eased him onto the concrete floor.
"Don't wait, Walker."
Ben jerked his head toward the weapons cache.
"If you don't take out that bird fast, it won't matter if they're down here."
Evan lifted the missile launcher from the hook on the wall. The chopper must be in range now. He raced back up the stairs, taking them two at a time, the launcher heavy as a steel girder in his hands. His bad ankle sang with pain. He pushed through it. The hallway was empty. The air thrummed against his skin. The Black Hawk was circling directly above the house. Leave them up here and risk the shot? Or get them downstairs and risk the missile? He dropped the launcher onto the floor. Chapter 41. Cassie was pounding on the closet door and screaming Megan's name. She whirled around when Evan burst into the room.
"She's barricaded herself inside, the little bitch."
He shoved Cassie out of the way and slammed his shoulder into the door. It jerked on its hinges but did not give way.
"Cassie, Sam, basement now," he shouted.
They fled from the room. He brought up his good foot and slammed it into the middle of the door. The wood cracked again.
Crack.
Again.
Crack.
3 steps back, and he lowered his shoulder into the crack. The door ripped down the middle, and he stumbled through the opening into darkness. A pair of eyes wide with terror regarded him from the corner. He held out his hand.
"We're about to be blown up, Megan."
She shook her head. She wasn't leaving. No way. He reached for her, and her hands balled into fists and pummeled his face. She scratched at his eyes. She screamed as if she were being beaten to death. He grabbed her wrist and yanked. She flew into his chest, then kicked his groin hard while reaching toward the back of the closet with her free hand. A teddy bear lay among the wads of clothes.
"Captain!"
He grabbed the bear.
"Here, I've got him."
The first Hellfire missile struck the house precisely 2 minutes and 22 seconds later. Chapter 42. Carrying Megan, Evan was halfway down the basement stairs when the concussion from the blast hurled them into the air. He whipped his body around as he fell. He would take the force of the impact, not the little girl. Slamming into the concrete floor knocked the wind out of him. Megan rolled off his chest and lay still. Then, the second missile struck. Flames roared down from above. He saw them coming, a bright orange and red battering ram. He threw himself over the girl. The fire passed over them. He smelled his hair singe, felt the furnace hot breath through his shirt. He lifted his head. Across the basement, he could see Cassie and Sam crouching beside Ben. He crawled over to them, dragging Megan behind him. Cassie's eyes met his.
"Is she?"
He shook his head. "No."
"Where's the launcher?"
Ben asked. Evan pointed at the ceiling. "Upstairs, where it used to be, when there wasn't upstairs." Dislodged cobwebs and dust swirled around them. The ceiling was holding for now. He doubted it could withstand another hit. Ben Parrish must have been thinking the same thing.
Oh, that's great, Ben turned to Cassie. Let's everybody form a prayer circle quick because we have just been royally fucked.
It'll be okay, Evan assured him. He touched Cassie's cheek. It's not the end. Not yet. He stood up. They came here for one thing, he said quietly, his voice barely audible above the inferno over them. They opened fire because they assumed they'd failed. They think I'm dead. I'm going to show them that they're wrong. Mystified, Ben shook his head. He didn't understand. Cassie did, though, and her face darkened with anger. Evan Walker, don't you dare do this again. Last time, Mayfly. I promise. Chapter 43. He paused at the base of the stairs that led up into the smoke and flame. Behind him, Cassie was screaming, calling his name, cursing him. He climbed anyway. Ringer called it. They don't want us. They want him. Halfway up, he wondered if he should have killed Ben Parrish. He would be a liability to Cassie. Slow her down. Be a burden she may not be able to bear. He pushed the thought from his mind. Too late now. Too late to turn back. Too late to run. Too late to hide. Like Cassie beneath the car that day. Like Ben beneath the imploding death camp. He had reached the moment of facing that which he thought he could not face. He had risked everything to save her before. But those times the risk was measured, calculated, and a small chance always remained that he would endure. Not this time. This time he was marching straight into the belly of the beast. He turned once at the top of the stairs, but he could not see her and he could not hear her. She was lost in a haze of dust and smoke and the slowly spinning gossamer strands of cobweb. A cyclone whipped through the wreckage, the chopper making a pass, and the wind from its blades slung aside the smoke and tamped down the fire, flattening it out like a rolling red sea. He looked up and saw the pilot at the controls looking down. He raised his hands and shuffled forward. The fire encircled him. The smoke engulfed him. He walked through the maelstrom into clear, clean air. Evan Walker stood still in the middle of the road, hands up, as the helicopter came down. Chapter 44, Squad 1-9. From their position 300 yards to the north, the five-member strike team from Squad 1-9 watched the chopper fire two missiles, then its bye-bye house, blasted down to its concrete foundation in an orgasm of fire and smoke. In Milk's earpiece, the pilot's voice, "Hold your position, 1-9, repeat, hold position." Milk raises his fist to signal his team, "We hold." The chopper makes a wide arc to circle back over the target. Crouched beside Milk, Pixie sighs loudly, fussing with his eyepiece. The strap's too big for his little head, and he can't keep it snug. Swizz whispers for him to shut up, and Pix instructs him to kiss his ass. Milk tells them both to shut up. The team huddles beneath a faded Haviline sign beside an old brick building that had been a body shop before the world went foobar. Stacks of used tires and piles of rims, discarded engine parts and tools, all scattered around the lot like wind-driven leaves. The cars and trucks and SUVs and minivans are coated in dust and grime, with shattered windows and mildewed upholstery, relics of the irrelevant past. The generation that followed Squad 1-9, if there was a generation to follow, would not recognize the strange symbols attached to the trunks and grills of these rusting hulks. In 100 years, no one would be able to read the sign over their heads or even understand that the letters symbolized sounds. Like it matters anymore. Like anyone cares. Better not to remember. Better not to know. You can't mourn what you never had. The chopper hovers over the wreckage, and the downdraft from its blades flattens the smoke and pushes the flames sideways. They squint through their eyepieces. Milk and Pix to the south toward the chopper, Swizz and Snix to the west, Gummy to the north, scanning the terrain for the green glow of an alien-infested enemy. They will wait for the Black Hawk to pull out, then move south down the highway, clearing the area as they go. If there's any damn thing to clear. Unless the Teds took off when they heard the chopper's approach, anything in that house was toast. Pick saw it first, a tiny neon green spark that bobbed about in the flames like a firefly in the summer dusk. He poked Milk in the leg and pointed. Milk nodded with a grim smile. Oh yeah, they've drilled for this, dear Jesus. They can't remember how often, but this is the first time in a real combat situation. A living, breathing, honest to God, in the flesh infested. 6 months, 2 weeks, and 3 days since the buses brought them together, the girls and boys of Squad 19. 199 days, 4,776 hours, 286,560 minutes since Pix was Ryan, cowering in a drainage ditch, covered in scabs and sores and lice, with a bloated stomach and stick-thin arms and bulging, buggy eyes, brought onto the bus sobbing tearlessly because his body was starved for water. And Milk was called Kyle then, rescued from a camp a couple miles from the Canadian border. A big kid, sullen and angry, and itching for payback. Hard to control, difficult to break. But in the end, they broke him. They broke all of them. Jeremy to Swizz, Luis to Gummy, Emily to Snickers. A bunch of candy-ass names for a bunch of candy-ass recruits. The ones they could not break, the ones Wonderland told them were unfit, and the ones whose minds or bodies gave way in basic, disappeared into incinerators or into secret holding rooms to retrofit their bodies into bombs. It was easy. It was absurdly easy. Empty the vessel of hope and faith and trust, and you can fill it with anything you like. They could have told the kids in Squad 19 that 2 plus 2 equals 5, and they would have believed it. No, not just believed it. They would have killed anyone who claimed otherwise. A tall figure topped in green fire emerges from the smoke and flame. Arms up, hands empty, crossing the blackened rubble onto the road. And the chopper dips its nose and begins descending. The hell? Why didn't they waste him? Pix, you dumbass. He's gotta be the freaking target. Son of a bitch made it. The chopper sets down, and now Milk can see Hirsch and Reese hop from the hold. He can't hear them, but he knows what they're screaming at the Ted over the cacophony of the engine. Down, 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 hands on your head! The figure drops to its knees. Its hands are swallowed by the green fire dancing around its face. They drag the prisoner over to the bird and haul him inside. The pilot's voice squawks in Milk's ear. Returning target to base. See you on the backside, soldiers. The hawk roars directly over them, northbound. The Javelin sign quivers at its passing. Gummy watches the chopper shrink toward the horizon, and the world goes quiet fast, leaving only the wind and fire and his own heavy breath. This will be quick, he tells himself. Absently, he presses his hand against his shoulder, still tender from the night before, the wound still fresh. BQP. It was Milk's idea. Milk had seen Razor's body with his own eyes, and it was Milk who figured out what the letters stood for. Vincit qui patitor. He conquers who endures. They carved the same letters into their own arms, VQP, in honor of the fallen. Milk gives the signal, and they move out. Milk on the point, Pix right behind, Swizz and Snick the flankers, and Gummy bringing up the rear. Mark those windows across the street there, Snick. Check those cars, Swizz. They've drilled this 1,000 times, house to house, room to room, basement to roof. You clear the block, then move to the next one. Don't rush, watch your back. Watch your buddy's back. If you have the shot, take the shot. Simple. Easy. So easy, a child could do it. Which is one of the chief reasons they picked children to do it. 6 months, 2 weeks, and 3 days after the school bus rolled to a stop and a voice called out, "Don't be afraid, you're safe now, perfectly safe," Gummy hears something other than the wind and the fire in his own breath. A high-pitched whine, like the squealing of that bus's brakes. That's the last sound he hears before the 20-inch steel rim smashes into the back of his head, snapping his spinal cord. He's dead before he hits the ground. 184 days after rolling into camp, Snicks is next. She and Swizz drop to the ground when Gummy falls. That's the training. That's the memory their muscles hold, and their adversary knows it. She anticipated it. Lying on his belly, Swizz looks to his right. Snicks is making a strangled, gurgling sound, her rifle abandoned on the road next to her, both hands clutching the handle of the 25-inch screwdriver embedded in her neck. Her jugular's been severed. She will be dead in less than a minute. 4,416 hours after he saw the lights of the bus's headlamp stabbing through the woods in which he hid, Swizz scrambles on his hands and knees to the roadside and sees the green light through his eyepiece for a split second before it vanishes behind the old garage. The pale fire of an infested. Got you now, you son of a bitch. Swizz doesn't know what happened to Milk and Pix, and he doesn't turn around to find out. He's running on instinct and adrenaline and a rage that cannot be measured or exhausted. He heaves himself to his feet and takes off for the garage. She's already on the roof by the time he reaches the southeast corner of the building, waiting for him, ready to leap. At least, it'll be quick. Milk and Pix hear his rifle's report from their hiding place behind the overturned Tahoe that straddles the shoulder of the road. Three short staccato bursts. Tut, tut, tut. Then silence. With a soft, disgusted cry, Pix rips off his eyepiece. Screw this, fucker won't stay up. And Milk calmly orders him to put it back on while he scans their surroundings. Pix ignores him. Broad daylight, he can see fine, and who cares whether they're human or infested anymore? Wind and fire and their own breath. Don't get pinned, don't go down any dead ends, don't split up. Lying on his side, his shoulder pressing against the comforting steel of the SUV, Pix looks up into Milk's face. Milk's the Sarge. Milk won't let him down. BQP. Hell yes, BQP. The girl's bullet travels across the road, shatters the driver's window, passes through the interior, and exits on the other side, ripping through Pix's jacket and burrowing into his back until it reaches his spine. There, the bullet stops. 264,963 minutes from his rescue to this moment, and Milk scoots toward the front bumper, dragging Pix's body with him. The upper half jerks in his hands. The lower half is paralyzed, dead already. And what the fuck were they thinking, carving those stupid letters into their arms? Pix's small fingers clawing at Milk's face as the light drains from his eyes. Protect me, cover me, keep the bastards off me, Sarge. That's right, Pix. BQP. BQ fucking P. He's still whispering to him when she steps around the hood of the car. He doesn't look up. He doesn't even hear her. 15,897,792 ticks of the clock, and Milk follows the rest of Squad 1-9 down.
Chapter 45. Ringer. I won't leave these boys to rot where they fell. I won't leave them for the rats and the crows and the blowflies, the buzzards and packs of feral dogs. I will not abandon their bones to be picked over and scattered by vultures and vermin. I will not burn them either. With my bare hands, I will dig a grave for them in the cold earth. The sun slips toward the horizon. The wind picks up, whipping my hair across my face, and the ground breaks between my fingers. My hands the plow that breaks the stubborn soil for the planting. I know Zombie's watching me. I can see him at the edge of the black, blasted-out ruins of the house. He's leaning on a piece of charred 2x4, holding his rifle and watching me. Twilight settles around us, and still he watches as I carry the bodies one by one to the hole I've dug. He hobbles over. He's going to shoot me. He's going to kick my body into the hole and bury me with my victims. He won't wait for me to explain. There will be no questions because everything out of my mouth will be a lie. He stops. I'm kneeling beside the grave and their faces are looking sightlessly up at me. The oldest, the squad leader, I'm guessing, could not be older than 20. The sound of the bolt on Zombie's rifle drawing back is enhanced and the hub orders a defensive response. I ignore it. I shot Teacup, I say into the face of the dead recruit. I thought she was the enemy and I shot her. She had one chance and I had no choice. I let them take us, Zombie. It was the only way to save her. His voice is as dry as dead leaves rattling on winter boughs. Then where is she? Gone. The word hangs. Even the wind can't move it.
What did they do to you, Ringer?
I look up. Not at him, straight up. The first stars peek at me through the gloaming. The same thing they did to Walker. The same thing they did to Constance and that priest and the cat lady. Above me, the stars shine down unblinking. I blink, and my tears fall silver in their light. Vosh's gift allows me to see to the very edge of the universe, but I couldn't see the prison walls on every side. The truth. The 12th system enhances all others, including the one that's been tearing my body apart since I returned from the wilderness. I refused to face the truth. I knew it, and I refused. A man blind from birth reaches out and touches an elephant's ear. An elephant is flat like a sheet. Another blind man touches its trunk. An elephant is shaped like a snake. A third strokes its leg. An elephant is like a tree. I lower my head to the grave and speak the truth aloud. I'm pregnant.
Chapter 46. Cassie.
Ben's dead. He left us, saying he'd be right back. But he hasn't come right back. He hasn't come back at all. I huddle in the far corner of the basement with Sam and Megan. I've got a rifle, Megan's got Bear, and Sam's got an attitude. Grace's gun collection is 6 feet away. So many pretty, shiny things Sam can hardly contain himself. The most delightful thing he's discovered about shooting someone is how ridiculously easy it is. Tying your shoes is harder. I grab a heavy wool blanket from the stack beside the workbench and throw it over all three of them, Sam's, Meg's, and Bear. I'm not cold, he cries. Sam, not Bear. It isn't for warmth, I mutter at him. I start to explain, but the words peter out into meaningless dribble. What happened to Evan? What happened to Ben? What happened to Ringer? Finding out the answer to any of those questions would require me to rise from this floor, cross the length of this basement, climb those stairs, and possibly shoot someone or be shot myself, all of which calls for something I haven't got right now. Last time, Mayfly. I promise. Oh, that stupid, gag-worthy pet name. I should have called him something equally demeaning and cloying. Shark Boy is a good one. Jawsy. The wooden stairs creak. I stay put. Cassiopeia's last stand. I have a full magazine and a heart full of hate. You don't need much of anything else. Beside me, Sam hisses, Cassie, it's zombie. Sure enough. Clumping awkwardly and badly off balance, too, like a real zombie. He's out of breath by the time he reaches the bottom. He leans against the wall, lips parted, face drained of color. Well? I call across the room at him. Did you find him? He shakes his head. He glances up the stairs. He looks back at me. Chopper, he says. What about the chopper? Evan blew it up? Stupid question. I would have heard it. He got on it. Ben needs to sit. A wound like his hurts like a mother. I should know. Why won't he sit? Why is he hanging there by the stairs? What do you mean he got on it? I mean he got on it. They took him, Cassie. Another look up the stairs, so I ask him why he keeps looking up the stairs. He goes, there was a strike team. There's a strike team? There was a strike team. He wipes the back of his hand across his mouth. Not anymore. His voice shakes, and I don't think it's from the pain or the cold. Ben Parrish appears to be scared shitless. Ringer? Duh, Sullivan, who else? Ringer. He nods, then glances again topside. That's when I stand up. Sam, too. I tell him to stay. He tells me no. Ben holds up a hand. There's an explanation, Cassie. I'm sure there is. You need to hear her out. Or what? She snaps my neck with her super ninja powers? Ben, what's the matter with you? She brought them to us. You gotta trust me on this. No, you need to trust me.
I told you before she left, there's something not right about her. Now she's back and there's something really not right. What else do you need, Ben? What does she have to do for you to accept the fact she isn't on your side? Cassie, trying very hard to keep it together. I want you to put down that weapon. That's not going to happen. Trying very hard to be patient. I won't let you hurt her, Cassie. And Sam goes, Zombie's the Sarge. You have to do what he says. The stairs creak again. Ringer stops halfway down. She's not looking at me. She's looking at Ben. For a horrible second, I think about shooting them both, grabbing Sam and Megan, and running until we run out of land to run on. Picking sides, deciding who you can trust, deciding what's truth and what's not. You reach a point where chucking it all seems like the least intolerable option. Like people who commit suicide. You just get sick of the hassle. It's all right, Ben says to her, or maybe to me, or maybe to both of us. It's going to be fine. She leaves the gun on the stairs, I call over. Ringer drops her rifle right away. Why am I not comforted? Then she descends to the last step and sits. Chapter 47. There's been a shitload of huh moments since the others came, but this one has got to be the huh-est of them all. After the first go-around, I figure I must be missing something, so I ask Ringer to explain herself again, slower this time, with a little more detail and a lot more evidence. They aren't here, she says. I'm not even sure they're there, with a nod toward the basement ceiling and the unseen sky beyond. How could they not be there? Ben wonders. There he goes again, deferring to her like the mealy-mouthiest courtier in Queen Ringer's court. I'm starting to wonder about Ben's ability to judge character. Since this war began, he's been shot twice, both times by the person who claimed to be on his side. The mothership could be completely automated, Ringer explains. Obviously, some form of sentient life built it, but the builders themselves could be light years from here. Or nowhere. Nowhere? Ben echoes. Dead, extinct. Sure, why not? I'm fiddling with the bolt catch of my M16. Ben might still trust her after she lied about Teacup and where she was and what happened while she was there, plus her delivering an assassin to our doorstep, plus being shot by her twice. I'm not so gobsmacked by her feminine charm, which, by the way, you could fit on the head of a pin and still leave room for angels to dance. A couple thousand years ago, their probes find us. They watch. They wait. At some point, they figure out we're no good for the Earth or ourselves, so they build the mothership and load it down with bombs and drones and viral plague and proceed to wipe out 99.9% of the population with the help of human thralls who've been brainwashed since birth, because that's our medicine. That's what's good for us. Cassie, Ben says, take a breath. That's one scenario, Ringer says calmly. Actually, it's the best case scenario. I shake my head and look over at Sam and Megan huddled under a big blanket in the corner. Incredibly, both have fallen asleep, their heads pressed together, bear tucked beneath their chins, in a tableau that would be cute beyond words if it wasn't so heartbreakingly symbolic of something. Well, of everything. Just like your silencer theory, I snap at her. A computer program downloaded into fetuses that boots up when the kid hits puberty. A scenario. No, that's a fact. Vosh confirmed it. Right. The maniac who orchestrated the murder of 7 billion people. Well, sure, if he said it, then it must be true. Why else would he want Walker so badly? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because Evan betrayed his entire civilization and is the one person on the planet who can stop them? Ringer is looking at me like I'm something disgusting she found growing on her toothbrush. If that's all there is to it, your boyfriend would be dead right now. He could be dead right now. It kills me how you claim to know so much despite the fact that you don't know much at all. Theories, scenarios, possibilities, odds, whatever. And for your information, just so you know, and this is no supposition based on the theory that I am Ringer, ergo I know all, He isn't my boyfriend.
My face is hot. I'm thinking of the night I landed on the shores of Evanland and planted my flag upon that sculpted beach. Ben says something at that point, which I totally miss, because my mind has a way of scolding its own thoughts. Like, how could I be the flag planter? Shouldn't that be Evan?
Evan is human, Ringer insists. His purpose is obvious. What isn't so obvious, and why Vosh needs to deconstruct his programming, is what triggered Evan's mind to rebel. He didn't just betray his people. He betrayed himself.
Well, Ben sighs. That's fucked up.
He shifts his weight against the wall, trying to find a more comfortable position. That's not possible with a bullet in your leg. Believe me, I've tried.
So there are no escape pods coming to evac the silencers, Ben says slowly. No pods, so no way to the mothership. No way to the mothership, so no way to blow it up. Shoots that plan all to hell. What about bombing the cities? Or is that a lie his programming told him too?
Ringer doesn't answer for a long time. I have no clue what she's thinking. Then I start thinking maybe this whole deal is a trick. A Vosh's. Something happened to Ringer after she checked out of the Walker Hotel. Somebody implanted her with bionics that turned her into a part-human, part-machine weapon of mass destruction. How do we know she hasn't flipped to the other side? A certain brawny paper towel-looking guy did. How do we know she wasn't always on the other side?
My thumb's working that bolt catch again.
I think they are going to bomb the cities, she finally says.
Why? I demand. What's the point?
A lot of reasons. For one, it evens the playing field before the launch of the fifth wave. Urban combat gives the silencers every advantage, and you can't tip favor too far to one side. But the most important reason is cities hold our memories.
What?
Then I get it. And getting it makes my stomach hurt. My father and that damned wagon and those damned books. Libraries, museums, universities, everything we designed and built over 6,000 years. Cities are more than the sum of their infrastructure. They transcend brick and mortar, concrete and steel. They're the vessels into which human knowledge is poured. Blowing them up will be the final reset of the clock back to the Neolithic.
Not enough to reduce the population to a sustainable level, Ringer says softly. Not enough to level what we built. We'll repopulate, we'll rebuild. To save the planet, to save our species, they have to change us.
She touches her chest.
Here. If the others can take away trust, they take away cooperation. Take away cooperation, and civilization is impossible.
Chapter 48. Okay, Ben says. Time to get down to the gnarly nub of it. No on the pods, but yes on the bombs, which means we can't stay here, too close to Urbana. That's fine with me, because I really fucking hate Urbana. So where? South? My vote is south. Find a source of fresh water, miles from anywhere, as in the middle of nowhere.
And? Ringer asks.
And what?
And what then?
What then?
Yes. After we get to nowhere, then what?
Ben lifts a hand. Lets it fall. His mouth curls into a smile. He looks so boyishly cute in this moment that I feel like bursting into tears.
There's five of us. I say we form a band.
I laugh out loud. Sometimes Ben's like a bracing mountain stream I dip my toe into.
Anyway, Ben says after 2 seconds of Ringer staring blankly at him, what the hell else are we going to do?
He looks at her. He looks at me.
Oh, Christ, Sullivan, he moans, tapping the back of his head against the wall. Don't even go there.
He came for me, I tell him. He knows I'm thinking it, so I might as well say it. We're both a little surprised that I've gone there.
He saved your life, twice. He saved mine 3 times.
Ben's right,
Ringer butts in. It's suicide, Sullivan. I roll my eyes. I've heard this shit before. From Evan Walker himself when he realized I was bullying my way into a death camp to find my baby brother. Why must I always be the Isle of Crazy alone in an ocean of sensibility? The should to everybody else's shouldn't. The I will to their better nots. Staying here is suicide too, I argue. So is running to nowhere. Anything we do now is suicide. We're at the point in the story where we have to choose, Ringer. A meaningful death or a senseless one. Besides, I add, he'd do it for us. No, Ben says quietly. He would do it for you. The base they're taking him to is over 100 miles away, Ringer says. Even if you reached it, you won't reach it in time. Vosh will be finished with him and Evan will be dead. You don't know that. I do know that. No, you say you know that, but you don't really know that, just like you don't know everything else you say you know, but we're just supposed to believe it because, hell, you're just brilliant little you. And Ben goes, huh? Whatever we do, Ringer says coolly to Ben, as if nothing I just said wasn't a major league smackdown. Staying is not an option. As soon as that chopper delivers its cargo, it's coming back. Cargo? Ben asks. She means Evan, I translate. Why would it? Then he gets it. Ringer's victims buried down the road. The chopper's coming back to extract the strike team. Oh. He wipes the back of his hand across his mouth. Crap. And I'm thinking, hey, chopper. And Ringer is watching me and thinking she knows what I'm thinking, which she does, but that doesn't prove she's always right. Forget it, Sullivan. Forget what? And right away I acknowledge my coyness. You did it, or at least you said you did it. Did what? Ben asks. That was different, Ringer says. Different how? Different in that the pilot was in on it. My escape from Vosh wasn't an escape. It was a test of the 12th system. Well, we can pretend this is a test too, if that helps. Pretend what is a test? Ben's voice rises an octave in his frustration. What the hell are you two talking about? Ringer sighs. She wants to hijack the Black Hawk. Ben's mouth drops open. I don't know what or why it is, but when he's around Ringer, the smart drains out of him like spaghetti water through a colander. What about him? Ringer nods toward Sam's. He's coming too? That's your business? I ask. Well, I'm not babysitting while you go all Don Quixote on this. You know, making obscure literary references doesn't impress me. And yes, I happen to know who Don Quixote is. Okay, wait a minute, Ben says. He's from The Godfather, right? Straight-faced, so I'm not sure if he's joking. Back in the day, there was serious talk about Ben becoming a Rhodes Scholar. No lie. You're gonna make Vosh an offer he can't refuse? Ben can stay with the kids. I inform Ringer, as if I've thought it all out, as if the plan for rescuing Evan has been in the works for months. We go, just you and me. She's shaking her head. Why would I do that? Why wouldn't you do that? She stiffens, and then, for some unclear reason, she looks over at Ben. So I look over at Ben, and Ben is looking straight down at the floor like he's never seen one before. What is this amazing hard surface under my feet? How about this? I won't stop trying. Why won't I stop? I try to stop, and then I fail. Forget me. Forget Evan. Do it for yourself. Myself? She's genuinely puzzled. Ha! For once, she can't pretend she knows what I'm thinking. He's finished with you. He's done. So you have to go to him if you want to end it. Ringer recoils like somebody slapped her. She wants to pretend she doesn't know who I'm talking about. Fat chance. I saw it in her face when she told the story. I heard it in her voice. Between the frowns and long silences, it was there. When she said his name, and when she couldn't bring herself to say his name, it was there. He's the reason she hasn't given up, why she hangs on, her raison d'etre. The thing worth dying for. Vosh thinks you're going to zig, so you zag.
He thinks you're going to run away, so you run toward. You can't undo what he's done, but you can undo him.
It won't solve anything, she whispers.
Probably not, but he'll be dead. There's that.
I hold out my hand. I'm not sure why. It really isn't my deal to make because I can't promise final delivery of the goods.
That little, rational, calm, ancient, wise voice in my head chirps,
She's right. It's suicide, Cassie. Evan's gone, and this time there'll be no miracles. Let him go. My place is with Sam. It's always been with Sam. Sam is my raison d'etre. Not some delusional Ohio farm boy crazy all the way down to the bottom of his bones. Jesus, if Ringer is right, even Evan's love may be part of the crazy. He thinks he's in love with me like he thinks he's another. So, what's the difference between thinking it and actually being it? Is there a difference? There are times I hate my own brain. The dead, Ringer says in a voice that reflects the word. Nothing there. Gone. Empty. I came here to kill one innocent person. I killed five. If I go back, I'll kill until I lose count. I'll kill until counting doesn't matter. She isn't looking at me. She's looking at Ben. And it'll be easy. She turns to me. You don't understand. I am what he made me. I wish she'd cry. I want her to shout, scream, shake her fist, punch something, howl until her voice gave out. Anything would be better than the scooped out, empty way she talked. What she said didn't match how she said it, and that's scary. And in the end, we'll both fail, she tells me. Evan will die, and Vosh will live. She takes my hand anyway. Even scarier.
Chapter 49. By this point, Ben has reached the end of his endurance, physical and mental. He can't remain standing any longer or keep up with this very strange, very quick turnabout, from she's a traitor to she's my partner. He hops over to the stairs and lowers himself down, stretching his bad leg out in front of him. He stares at the ceiling, stroking the underside of his chin.
Ringer, maybe you better get up there again, in case you missed somebody.
She shakes her head and her shiny black hair swings back and forth, a silky obsidian curtain.
I didn't miss anybody. Well, in case somebody else comes along.
Like who?
His head turns slowly in her direction. Bad people.
She looks at me, then she nods. She steps around him and stoops halfway up to retrieve her rifle. I hear her whisper, don't, to him before disappearing from view.
Don't?
What is it with you two? I ask.
What's what?
The little looks, the don't just now?
It's nothing, Cassie.
Nothing would be no little looks and no don'ts. He shrugs, then glances up the stairs to the hole that opened to bare sky where the house used to be.
No getting there, he says.
He smiles as if he's embarrassed for saying something stupid.
No matter how well you know someone, there's still a part of them you won't. You can't. Like ever. A locked room. I don't know.
He shakes his head and laughs. The laugh collapses the moment it's born. With Ringer, that's more like all the rooms in the Louvre, I point out. Ben hauls himself to his feet and limps over to me, using his rifle as a crutch. By the time he arrives, his face is a study in exhaustion and pain. There you go. Parrish heals up from one Ringer-inflicted wound, so she gives him another. Gotta keep the streak going.
Have you lost your mind? He asks.
What do you think?
I think you have.
How can you tell? I'm fully confident he won't understand my question.
The Cassie Sullivan I know would never leave her little brother.
Maybe I'm not the Cassie Sullivan you know.
So you're just gonna leave him?
With you.
Maybe you haven't noticed, but when it comes to protecting people, I suck.
It's not about you, Parrish. He slides down the wall beside me, takes a few deep breaths. Then he blurts out,
Let's get real, okay?
She won't get to Vosh, and you won't get to Evan. That part's done. Time for the next part.
The next part?
Them.
He nods towards Sammy and Megan curled beneath the blanket.
It's always been about them from day one. The enemy always knew it. The really sad and freaky part is why it's been so easy for us to forget.
I haven't forgotten, I tell him. Why do you think I'm going? This isn't about Evan Walker, and it isn't about you or me. If Ringer is right, Evan's our last hope.
I look at my baby brother's face, angelic in sleep.
His last hope.
Then I'll go with Ringer. You stay here.
I shake my head. You're broken. I'm not.
Bullshit. I can get around.
I'm not talking about your leg. He flinches. His jaw tightens.
That's not fair, Cassie.
I'm not worried about fair. This isn't about fair. This is about the odds and risk. This is about my brother living to see next Christmas. It would be great if there were someone I could tag to do it for me, but I'm it, Parrish. It's down to me. Because I'm still there, Ben, under that car on the highway. I never got out and I never got up. I'm still there waiting for the bogeyman to come get me. And if I run now, anywhere or nowhere, he's going to find me. He's going to find Sam.
I tug Bear from the blanket and hug him to my chest.
I don't care about whether Evan Walker is an alien or a human or an alien human or a freaking turnip. I don't care about your baggage or Ringer's baggage, and I especially don't care about my baggage. The world existed for a very long time before this particular set of 7 billion billion atoms came along, and it will go right on after they're scattered up, down, and sideways.
Ben reaches out and touches my wet cheek. I push his hand away.
Don't touch me.
You has been. You what might have been. Look, Cassie, I'm not your boss and I'm not your daddy. I can't stop you any more than you could have stopped me from going to the caves.
I press my face into the top of Bear's ratty old head. Bear smells like smoke and sweat and dirt. And my little brother.
He loves you, Ben. More than me, I think. But that...
Not true, Cassie. Don't interrupt me. That's like one of my things, just so you know. And now I would like to say something.
Okay.
There is something I'd like to say.
I'm listening.
Looking away. Looking at nothing. Deep breath.
Don't say it, Cass. What's the point now?
There is no point. Maybe that's something we both need to understand.
I've had a crush on you since the third grade, I whisper. I wrote your name in notebooks. I drew hearts around it. I decorated it with flowers, mostly daisies. I had daydreams and dream dreams, and nobody knew except my best friend, who was dead, like everybody else. Looking away, looking at nothing. But you were where you were, and I was where I was. You could have been in China for all it mattered. When you showed up out of nowhere at Sammy's camp, I thought it had to mean something. Because you lived when you should have died, and I lived when I should have died, and we were both there for Sam, who also should have died. Just too many coincidences to be just a coincidence, you know? But that's all it is, a coincidence. There's no divine plan. There's nothing fated in our stars. No meant to be in any of it. We are accidental people occupying an accidental planet in an accidental universe. And that's okay. These 7 billion billion atoms are good with that.
I press my lips onto that nasty stuffed animal's head. Really neat that human beings conquered the Earth, invented poetry and mathematics and the combustion engine, discovered that time and space are relative, built machines big and small to ferry us to the moon for some rocks or carry us to McDonald's for a strawberry banana smoothie. Very cool, we split the atom and bestowed upon the Earth the internet and smartphones and, of course, the selfie stick. But the most wonderful thing of all, our highest achievement and the one thing for which I pray we will always be remembered, is stuffing wads of polyester into an anatomically incorrect, cartoonish ideal of one of nature's most fearsome predators for no other reason than to soothe a child.
Chapter 50.
There are preparations to make, details to work out. First, I'll need a uniform. Ben sits with the kids while Ringer and I dig up the bodies. There's the smallest recruit, whose uniform seems like the right size, but there's a bullet hole in the back of the jacket. Might be hard to explain. Ringer hauls out the next body, whose duds are dirty but unmarred by bullet holes and nearly blood-free. She explains that she crushed his skull with a 20-inch steel rim. He didn't feel it, she assures me. Didn't see it coming. It's okay. I feel my gorge rise. It's okay. I change right there by the side of the road under the naked sky. Ha! Naked sky. And there is Cassiopeia above me, chained to her chair, watching her namesake bare herself and the dead boy, too. I catch Ringer looking at him, and her face is even paler than usual. I follow her gaze to the kid's arm, where cruddy-looking scabs glisten in the starlight. What are those? Letters? What is that? I ask while rolling up the pant legs. They're a good 4 inches too long. It's Latin, she answers. It means, he conquers who endures. Why is it cut into his arm like that? She shakes her head. Her hand wanders to her own shoulder. She thinks I don't notice. You have one too, don't you? No. She kneels beside the boy, his combat knife in her hand. She slices along the tiny scar on the back of his neck and gingerly digs the tracking device from the cut. Here, put this in your mouth. Like fuck! She cups it in the palm of her hand and spits on it, rolls the rice-sized pellet around in her spit to clean off the blood. Better? In what way could that possibly be better? She grabs my hand and deposits the gooey pellet into my palm. You clean it then. I lace up the boots as she cuts into another kid's neck, dips out the tracker with the tip of the knife, then slides the blade between her lips. There is something matter-of-factly savage about it, and her words echo in my head. I am what he made me.
Chapter 51. Preparations, details. I'll need gear, but only what I can fit into the pockets and pouches of the uniform. Extra magazines for the rifle and sidearm, a knife, a penlight, a couple of grenades, 2 bottles of water, and 3 power bars, at Ben's insistence. Parrish has this weird, superstitious faith in power bars, which is totally bogus, unlike my belief in the talismanic force of teddy bears. What if you're wrong? I ask Ringer. What if nobody comes looking for the strike team? She shrugs. Then we're screwed. So bright and cheerful. Such a ray of sunshine. I wake Sam and Megan and make them eat while Ben and Ringer prep for the assault outside. Something's up between those two. Something they're keeping from me. Kind of makes me wish I had Evan's old mind-mining abilities. I'd plunge into Ben Parrish's head and hack my way to the truth. I thought I busted Ringer with that part of her silencers are ordinary people like us, only more so, theory. How did Evan's spirit enter and mix with mine if he's human? Her answer required advanced degrees in robotics, bionics, and electromagnetic physics to understand. The CPU attached to his brain interpreting my physiological biofeedback, creating an informational loop in which my data commingled with his, blah, blah, blah. Really, science is wonderful, but why does it tend to suck all the joyous mystery from the world? Love may be nothing more than a complex interaction of hormones, conditioned behavior, and positive reinforcement, but try writing a poem or song about that. Preparations. Details. I brief Sam and Megs on the plan. Sam's all in. Although infiltrating the base would be his top choice, at least he'll have some quality time with his beloved zombie. Megan doesn't say a word, and I'm worried she might balk at the critical moment. Can't blame her, though. The last time she trusted grown-ups, they stuffed a bomb down her throat. I hand Bear to Sam for safekeeping. Sam's as much as the Bear's. He hands it over to Megan. Oh, Jesus. Too big for Bear now. They grow up so fast. Blankets, I tell them. Everybody except Ringer gets a blanket. Then there's nothing left to do but climb the stairs one last time. I take Sammy's hand. Sammy takes Megan's. Megan takes Bear's.
and together we rise toward the surface. The stairs jiggle and moan. They may collapse. We won't.
Chapter 52, Zombie. I watch as Ringer carries the last two bodies into the bay of the old garage, one under each arm. I understand how that's possible. Still, it's a little freaky to watch. I wait by the empty grave for her to come out. It doesn't happen. Oh boy, now what? Inside the garage, the smell of gasoline and grease brings home the past. Before there was Zombie, there was this kid named Ben Parrish, who worked on cars with his old man on Saturday afternoons, the last being a cherry red 69 Corvette, his 17th birthday present from his dad, a guy who really couldn't afford it and pretended it was for his only son, but they both knew the truth. Ben's birthday was an excuse to buy the car, and the car was an excuse to spend time with his son as the clock wound down to graduation, and then college, and then grandkids, and then the retirement home, and then the grave. The grave leapt unexpectedly to the front of the line. Not before the car, though. At least for a few Saturday afternoons, they had the car. She'd laid her victims side by side in the center of the bay, crossing each one's arms across their chest. Ringer herself is nowhere in sight. For a second, I panic. Every time I expect a zig, there's a zag. I shift my weight to my good leg and drop the rifle from my shoulder into my hands. From the deep shadows in the back, a low-pitched whine, punctuated by a snuffling. I limp past rows of toolboxes and a cluster of oil drums, behind which I find her, sitting against the cinder block wall, hugging her knees to her chest.